Well, now, gather round, kiddies. It's good to see you back by the fire again. Tonight, we're going to talk about ambition. That hunger deep inside folks that pushes them forward, sometimes too far forward. Ambition's a funny thing, kids. It's the spark that lights the fire of success. And sometimes, it's the fire that burns everything to ashes. You see, some treasures are meant to stay hidden, and some dreams are best left buried deep in the dark. Tonight we're going to see exactly what happens when twisted ambitions drive folks to do the unthinkable. First up tonight, we've got a special treat from author Ted Hegman. His first original horror story in decades. Some of you campers might know Ted from his legendary internet horror story, Ted the Caver. If you haven't checked it out, well, I highly recommend you do. That is, if you survive tonight's story. Oh, and before we dive into tonight's first tale, I'd like to let you know that both of tonight's sinister stories come from the anthology Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, 30 Tales of Terror, now available on Amazon.com, starting at just $4.99. And there are plenty more where this evening's tales came from. So if you enjoy them, grab yourself a copy and keep the nightmares coming. Now, campers, settle in close, hold tight to your shovels, because some things should never be dug up. We've all heard stories about hidden riches, chests of gold and silver just waiting to be discovered by some lucky soul. But what happens when the promise of wealth becomes an obsession? When the glitter of gold blinds you to what's truly important, until you're willing to bury secrets and bodies to claim it for yourself? Tonight, in our first story, you'll meet Theo, a troubled young man whose hunger for fortune might just dig him into a hole he can't escape from. Because some treasures, once uncovered, exact a price far greater than their worth. Without further ado, I present to you Buried Treasure by Ted Hegman. When Theo arrived at his uncle's farm, it was a bit of an ambivalence. On the one hand, he hadn't wanted to go there in the first place. It was a desperate attempt by his parents and the state to straighten him out. On the other hand, he'd heard family rumors about his Uncle Luke and his treasure hunting and was eager to explore the possibility of acquiring some of the treasure. He didn't let the fact that no one in the family could explain how Uncle Luke knew about a treasure deter him from wanting some of it. Theo didn't feel like he deserved to be at the farm. Sure, he had stolen a few things, but he needed the things. And the few things that he didn't need were taken from people that deserved to lose them. Unfortunately, the police and the parents didn't agree with his reasoning. As a part of the deal with the courts, Theo was ordered to work on his uncle's farm for 6 months. It was something his lawyer came up with and that the judge and prosecuting attorney agreed to. "Hello, Uncle Luke," said Theo, after unloading his suitcase from his parents' car. "Yep," was his uncle's one-word reply. After Theo was shown to his room, his uncle pretty much disappeared for the rest of the day. That left Theo alone to explore the farm. It was common for his uncle to disappear, as Theo would find out, and just as common for Theo to go off exploring. The farm was a huge tract of land. It had numerous sheds, barns, and outbuildings which dotted the land. Theo wanted to explore all of them. Although Uncle Luke didn't have any rules and almost no restrictions, he did make it clear that Theo was not allowed in one certain shed. That shed was a large building with a large steel door, no windows, and a garage door big enough for a large pickup. The farm was laid out according to the various crops that were grown there. It was surrounded by other large farms, so neighbors were not close, and that suited Uncle Luke just fine. Other than his nearest neighbor's son, A.J., Luke didn't much care for his neighbors. Theo met A.J. a couple of times. He'd show up almost daily and work for Uncle Luke. He was close to Theo's age, so Theo really wanted to hang out with him. His opportunity to get to know A.J. better came one day when Theo was wandering around the farm, bored. He saw A.J. raking up some small branches near a tree. "Hey, what's up?" said Theo. "Hey, Theo," said A.J. Theo was happy that A.J. remembered his name. The two young men commenced chatting for a long time about guy stuff. Life on the farm, plans for the future, young single women working out, and whatever popped into their heads. Theo was glad he was finally getting to know A.J., or anyone his age, for that matter. As the two chatted, Theo began to think about including A.J. in his search for whatever treasure might be hiding on the farm. He awaited until there was a slight pause in the conversation. Then he cautiously broached the subject. "You know, there are some interesting family rumors about my uncle that have been circulating for years," said Theo. "There's talk of a hidden treasure." A.J. looked very interested when Theo mentioned the treasure. "Any idea what the treasure is?" asked A.J. "No idea it even exists," said Theo. "Why don't you ask him?" said A.J. "Well, he doesn't exactly like me, or the rest of the family," said Theo. "I can't see a reason why he'd tell me about a treasure. I know he would not want to share any of it with us." "If he has some kind of treasure, he sure hasn't spent any of it," said A.J. "The man is poor as a church mouse. Have you ever thought he might need help finding the treasure in the first place? That would be a perfect way to get involved." Theo hadn't thought of that. Besides, if his uncle didn't let him get involved, he would be in the same boat he is in now. Theo committed to bringing it up to his uncle. Luckily, he didn't have to wait long. The next morning, Theo had a chance encounter with his uncle, which gave him the opportunity to ask about the treasure. Theo, as usual, had slept in and was just cleaning up his breakfast dishes. His uncle, who was usually out on the farm at this hour, came walking through the kitchen. "Good morning, Uncle Luke," said Theo, showing a little more respect than he actually had for his uncle. He was willing to do that if it helped him get into the treasure. "Morning," said his uncle, with a coldness that he actually felt for Theo. His uncle didn't break stride and continued to the living room. Theo followed and found his uncle standing in front of the fireplace, staring at the hearth. On it was an assortment of decorations. Prominently in the center were two rings. His uncle picked up the rings, the things he cared for most in the world, and stared at them. The rings belonged to his late wife. One was her diamond wedding ring, and the other was a bright red ruby ring. Despite rumors of the treasure, the second most common rumor heard about his uncle were the rumors about his wife, Theo's Aunt Daisy. The rumors went something along the lines of her dying, then coming back to life. Theo didn't believe in those rumors, but they made his aunt seem a lot more interesting. Theo wanted to talk to his uncle, but didn't feel like this would be a good time. Not that he cared about his uncle's feelings. He just wanted to get information about the treasure, but he didn't want his uncle to get offended and shut up about it. He tried another approach. "Uncle Luke," said Theo, with as much sincerity as he could muster. "Yes," said his uncle, with a different tone than Theo had ever heard. "I never got to meet Aunt Daisy," said Theo. "What was she like?" Uncle Luke only paused a second before he started talking. "She was amazing," said his uncle, with a hint of a smile. It was the first time Theo had seen him smile. He went on at length, talking about her qualities and how he missed her. Then, after rambling for quite a while, he said something that made Theo take notice. He was still talking about his now-deceased wife, but as his voice trailed off, he mumbled something about help with the treasure. Uncle Luke stopped talking after that. Theo wanted to ask some more questions, but didn't know if he had built up enough rapport to get an answer. If he asked, he thought, at least his uncle would know he was interested and might tell him when he was ready. "Uncle Luke," Theo said, "I've heard rumors about a treasure. I'm not sure what to think about that. No offense, but this house and this farm don't look like they belong to someone who found a treasure." Uncle Luke chuckled. "Yeah, a treasure sure would change someone's life," he said. "It isn't the first time someone's asked about it." Uncle Luke paused for an unusually long time. Theo was certain he was considering how much Luke wanted to tell him. Then he got his answer. "Yeah, there is a treasure," his uncle said. "The problem is that I can't find it, and I don't have the time and energy to dig for it." Theo couldn't believe his ears. He wanted to sprint to find AJ to let him know, but he had to play it cool, and he had to bring up AJ to his uncle. Theo thought quickly. "AJ already works for you," said Theo, thinking on his feet. "You could tell us where to dig, and we could do the work. Part of the problem is that I don't know exactly where it is. It could take a while." "I got plenty of time," joked Theo. He was glad to see his uncle smile at his comment. After another long pause, his uncle spoke. "Get AJ and you can get started." Theo's heart was racing as he sprinted out to the field to get AJ. On the way back to the farmhouse, Theo told AJ about the conversation he had had with his uncle. Then they rather prematurely started talking about the things they were going to buy with their share of the treasure. When they got back to the farmhouse, Uncle Luke told them to grab some digging tools from the shed in the back and meet him in the front yard. Then he took off for the prohibited shed. Even though Theo felt like he was now included in the treasure hunt, he still had a burning desire to explore that shed. When his uncle came back, Theo and AJ were eagerly awaiting his return. The pair followed Uncle Luke to what appeared to be a random spot on the farm. They were told to start here, and the eager young men started digging. Before leaving them, Uncle Luke gave them one last bit of information. "It won't be more than 4 or 5 feet deep," said Luke, before he left them. Theo and AJ were too busy digging to do much talking. But Theo couldn't stop thinking. Why would his uncle go to the shed first before showing them where to dig? Was there some kind of map? If there was a map, why wouldn't his uncle know exactly where it is? Theo couldn't wrap his head around his uncle's comment about not knowing exactly where the treasure was or how deep it was. Several sweaty hours later, the pair stopped to examine the hole. They had gone deeper than 5 feet, just to be sure. They stared at the emptiness. Unaccustomed to this much digging, even AJ's hands were sore. Theo could barely hold a shovel. The boys were exhausted. Suddenly, the idea of finding a treasure was much less appealing. The worst part was not knowing if they had to dig one more hole or 100. As if on cue, Uncle Luke walked up. He looked at the work that had been done and the condition of the people responsible for the hole. Uncle Luke even appeared to have a little sympathy for him. "Sorry, I can't tell you for sure where the treasure's at," he said. "I only know for sure it's in the area. Beyond that, I don't have a lot of clues." Although those comments didn't mean less digging, they somehow felt comforting to Theo. So what if he had to dig a bunch of holes? His renewed confidence in the existence of the treasure gave him a burst of energy. "Why don't you guys get cleaned up? We'll have some supper," said Uncle Luke. "You can fill the hole in the morning." That night, Theo slept better than the entire time he'd been on the farm. The next day, they filled in the hole, then went to another location. The next day, another, and another, and another. After more than a week of digging holes every day, Theo was getting suspicious of his uncle. He still couldn't figure out why his uncle wouldn't let the two guys examine the map, or whatever source his uncle was using, for information. Perhaps with three people giving input, they could be more precise about where to dig. On about hole number 12, as Theo was digging away, he had a thought that made him stop for a moment. Today was Thursday, and he knew that his uncle visited a friend of his in town nearly every Thursday. That might give him enough time to explore the shed that he hoped would contain the treasure map. Now he just had to figure out how to slip away from AJ. After thinking of a possible excuse to leave for a few minutes, Theo decided to fake an injury. After digging a scoop of dirt, Theo cried out and shook his gloved hand. "Did a blister pop?" asked AJ. It happened a lot to them. "Yep, pretty bad one," said Theo. "Be back in a few." Theo climbed out of the hole and walked toward the house. As soon as he got to the house, he grabbed a flashlight and then sprinted toward the shed. He'd been checking out the other sheds on the property and noticed a feature that was common amongst most of them, a hatch that led to a subfloor. He thought that if the prohibited shed had the same feature, it might help him get in the locked building. As soon as he got to the shed, he ran around to the back. The area behind the locked shed was covered with bushes that were thick and hid the back wall. After digging into the bushes for a bit, he found what he was looking for, a hatch door. He broke enough branches to reach the door, then threw it open. His flashlight lit up the darkness in the hole and revealed access to the subfloor, a tiny space between the ground and the floor of the shed. The only thing standing between Theo and the subfloor were a series of spider webs. Using his flashlight, Theo cleared the webs while their builders scurried to safety. He shined the light into the hole to make sure there were no creatures in the hatch. Then, with nervousness and excitement, he stepped onto the earth below. The hatchway was just big enough, for him to kneel down and see under the building. He could see cobwebs, but it was mostly just dirt. There were less than a foot of space between the dirt and the beams in the floor. He cringed at the thought of trying to crawl under there. He hoped he might be able to get into the shed through the floor. Now he wasn't sure he could do it. After he debated for a couple of minutes, he thought about the possibility of treasure and got enough courage to at least make an attempt. From being crouched down on all fours, he leaned forward and laid down on his belly. Then he started under the shed, moving slowly so he wouldn't kick up any dust. As he first got under the shed, he shined his light around to see what he could learn about the shed. To his left and ahead of him were empty spaces all the way to a wall. To his right was just as empty all the way to the cement wall, which was the foundation for the driveway, where a vehicle could park. Theo shined his light around the dirt and saw a few nails and other construction remnants. Then he saw something that really got his attention. Mouse droppings. He knew if there were mice, there could also be snakes. The beams and the floor were inches away from his head. Normally, he didn't mind tight places, but this was uncomfortable. He was patiently scanning the floor to look for access to the shed. Unfortunately, he felt something crawling on his leg. He started breathing heavily, filled with fear. He bent, then extended his leg rapidly and repeatedly. He still couldn't tell what was on him. Then, in a state of near panic, he swung the flashlight and hit his leg where it felt like the thing was. He didn't know if he hit it or if it retreated. He slowly calmed down and figured he was ready to leave. Theo slowly spun around on the dirt floor and prepared to scooch out of the crawl space. As he neared the hatchway, he saw something that made him freeze. There was a floorboard that was slightly warped, with the edge near the wall lifting off the beam slightly. The two nails that struggled to keep the board tight against the floor were losing the battle and were exposed. Theo knew that if he could push the board up, and maybe one next to it, he could get into the shed. He was elated. After exiting the hatch, Theo ran as fast as he could to a nearby shed that had some equipment he'd need. He opened the door to the shed and began rummaging for a jack. The small building contained a lot of equipment for repair, and it wasn't long before Theo was carrying a jack and a large block of wood back to the locked shed. Theo hurried to the shed, then to the hatch and back. He had left the hatch door open. He had to clear out a couple of new webs for some very ambitious spiders, and then he lowered the jack and wood into the hatch. With his adrenaline at full power, he hopped into the hatch and assumed the prone position on the dirt floor. The thought of getting into the shed almost made him forget about the thing that was crawling on his leg earlier. Almost. Theo would push the jack and block of wood ahead of him, then scooch toward it. It didn't take long to reach the floorboard that was slightly lifted. Once there, he set the jack on the block. The jack was just inches away from the floor. Perfect. He slowly started pumping the jack to get it to rise. Soon the jack was slowly lifting the floorboard with each stroke. Once the board was high enough, the nails that had been holding it in place no longer reached the beams, and the floorboard gave a little pop before falling to the side above the floor. He thought he might have to do the same thing to one more board in order to have room to squeeze through, but it looked like he could make it with the one board gone. Theo poked his head through the board and shined a flashlight around the shed. He slowly stood up, forcing his upper body through the narrow opening. After his hips made it through, he was able to step up onto the wooden floor, and he was in the shed. He couldn't remember being this excited before. He began to explore the shed. He used the flashlight to visually explore the small building. There were many things one would expect in a shed on a farm. Hand tools, gardening tools, repair equipment, and a variety of things that he couldn't identify. He was pleased to find a bottle of his uncle's moonshine. He even took a swig of the strong liquor before continuing his search. At some point, he caught a glimpse of his uncle's old pickup truck out of the corner of his eye, and there was a tarp covering something in the truck. Theo nervously climbed into the back of the truck. He lifted the tarp and nearly collapsed from what he saw. There, in the back of the truck, was a huge, ornate, gold and jewel-covered chest. Theo was struggling to catch his breath. In this staggered state of awe, hope, anticipation, and greed, he was barely able to climb into the back of the truck. He sat on the side of the bed, staring at the chest. After several long minutes, he held his breath and opened the lid. The rumors were true. His uncle had found a treasure. Nearly in shock, Theo sat staring at a chest almost half full of gold, silver, diamonds, jewelry, gold coins, and cash. He'd been fantasizing about this moment ever since he arrived at the farm. Now he was too amazed to do or say anything. As he continued to look at the treasure, he got angry. Why was his uncle making them dig when the treasure had already been found? He figured that at some point his uncle would tell the pair that the treasure must be a myth, then take it all. His anger began to grow, as did his greed. Slowly a change came over him. Initially, he had been planning on taking a large share of the treasure, then leaving the farm for good. But now he wanted it all for himself. He also knew what he had to do to accomplish that. He had to kill AJ. Once he had made that decision, he leapt into action. He looked around the shed and found a pry bar that was big enough to do the job and took off toward AJ and the hole. At the back of his mind, Theo was keeping track of the time. He wanted to make sure he got back to the treasure before his uncle returned. He was pretty sure he had enough time to do the deed and still get back. Theo got to a point where he could see the hole, and he could see that AJ was still digging away. He was a good worker. Theo watched from a distance for a few minutes to see the digging routine. Scoop, turn, toss the dirt on the pile, turn, scoop. Every 9 or 10 scoops, he would pause to catch his breath or wipe the sweat away. Theo knew he could time this perfectly. Right after the figure paused to wipe his forehead, Theo started creeping forward. He figured the correct angle to approach without being seen. He waited until the third scoop turned toss. Then whack! He struck his friend in the back of the head just below the hat. AJ dropped to the bottom of the hole. Thankfully, his hat stayed on and even shifted a little to cover the back of his head in the blood. The last thing Theo wanted was to have to stare at the face of his dead buddy. Theo paused for a few minutes. He was actually enjoying the adrenaline surge. He was starting to calm down and catch his breath when he thought about his uncle and that he could show up at any moment. He didn't want to get caught there, so he stood up and quickly started filling in the hole. After about 15 minutes of straight working, Theo took a breath to check his progress. He was rather pleased with how much dirt he had moved in that amount of time. The colors of the now setting sun cast a golden glow on the impromptu grave. Theo decided to take a break. Leaning on his shovel, he gazed at the sky, wondering what his new life was going to be like. His breathing had almost returned to normal when he first heard it. A muffled moan, and it was coming from the hole. Theo dropped to his knees and stared in the hole. The freshly created dirt pile was rustling ever so slightly. Theo froze. Just then, a gloved hand broke the surface of the dirt, looking like it was clawing the air. Theo practically fell to the ground. Quickly recovering, he started shoveling dirt as fast as he could into the hole. He barely made it out one more moan, then nothing but the thup, thup, thup of the scoops of dirt slowly adding to the crushing weight of the ever-growing pile in the hole. He was at a heightened state of alertness as he worked, trying desperately to hurry and finish, while straining to hear any sounds coming from the pile. Theo finished filling the hole, then picked up all the tools and headed back to the shed. He was exhausted and sweating heavily. On his way back, he kept having one thought in his head. What about his uncle? He wanted the whole treasure, but he didn't want to kill his uncle. Then he had an idea pop into his head that would solve his dilemma. Since he had locked the front door, when he got back to the shed, he had to crawl through the subfloor again. Once inside, he grabbed the moonshine and headed to the truck. He had to see the treasure again and make sure it wasn't a dream. Once he was in the back of the truck, he took a big swig of moonshine, and he exhaled sharply against the burn of the liquid sliding down his throat. He paused, then lifted the lid. Yes, the treasure was still there. With the help of the booze, he was starting to calm down from his experience at the hole. He shined a light in the chest as he took another drink of the strong liquor. Then he bolted into action. Leo lifted the loose board and began stashing the treasure in the subfloor. With AJ gone, his uncle would think he stole the treasure, then took off. Theo didn't stop making trips to the chest, to the subfloor, until the last coin, the last antique vase, the last jewels, the last bundle of cash was hidden in the subfloor. Then Theo quickly drove the nails back into place and climbed back into the back of the truck. He stared at the empty chest while he took another gulp of the homemade liquor and caught his breath. Many minutes and many gulps of moonshine later, Theo still hadn't taken his eyes off the chest. Moments after killing someone, he had already forgotten that part of the night. He was more focused on how his life was going to change for the better. He took a few more drinks. The exhaustion from filling the hole and hiding the treasure, plus his adrenaline subsiding, plus the alcohol, combined to leave Theo barely able to stay awake. He was drifting in and out of consciousness. Fortunately, he was having a relatively lucid moment when he heard a car pull up to the shed. He couldn't be discovered. Unfortunately, the moonshine left him incapable of doing much. So he did the only thing he still had the coordination to do. Collapse into the treasure chest, curl up in a ball, and pull the lid to the chest shut. The last thing he remembered before he passed out was hearing the click of the door to the shed being unlocked. Uncle Luke stood up slowly and walked across the living room to the hearth. He picked up a newly framed newspaper article. This article was from several days ago. It was from a newspaper published in the nearest big city. It told about a treasure that was recently buried and a cryptic description of the location that was sent anonymously to the newspaper. The letter about the buried treasure generated a lot of attention in the news. Already, people were scouring the region looking for it. It was just what Uncle Luke had hoped for. Uncle Luke had always wanted to hide a buried treasure and give an unknown stranger the chance to be rich. If they could find the treasure from the clues he gave, his sweetheart Daisy was just as excited about the idea, and many years ago the two of them began collecting the coins, gold, and other valuables that would eventually become the treasure. It made Uncle Luke sad that she had died before they could bury the treasure together and disclose the treasure map, thereby missing out on the accumulation of their efforts. Uncle Luke thought about AJ. He had disappeared the same night that his good-for-nothing nephew had disappeared, and the same night Luke had buried the treasure chest. His mind went back 2 weeks to that night. Uncle Luke had told the young men where they would be digging for the night. That still made him chuckle. Theo and AJ were nosing around, so he wanted to keep them busy digging holes. For nothing. He would just pick a new place night after night. Once he knew the boys would be preoccupied, Uncle Luke hopped in his car and drove to meet his friend that had helped him load the treasure chest into the truck. His friend was helping him now by providing a tractor to dig the hole to bury the chest. Once Uncle Luke saw the hole was dug, he drove back to the farm, hopped into the truck with the treasure chest, and drove back to the site to bury it. He quickly tied some rope around the chest so his friend could pull it out of the truck with the tractor. Once they lowered it into the hole, the tractor quickly covered the hole with dirt. A rock formation was placed on the ground where the chest was buried. The formation would be described in a letter that Luke sent to all the newspapers in the area. The letter would give clues as to its location. Then the treasure hunt would be on. After the chest was buried, Luke said goodbye to his friend and drove back to the farm. Now that's when he discovered AJ and Luke were missing. Theo's disappearance didn't really surprise Luke. He had been expecting Theo to run away since he got there. But he couldn't understand where AJ had gone. The hole they were digging had been filled in, so Luke knew they had stayed busy for most of the evening. The next day, Uncle Luke wrote the letter describing the treasure and clues to where it was buried and sent it anonymously to the local papers. Uncle Luke set the framed newspaper article back on earth. Then he picked up the two rings. Burying the treasure was bittersweet, since his beloved wife was not there to celebrate with him. He knew she'd be proud of him for accomplishing their goal. They had talked at length about how their treasure would change someone's life. Uncle Luke only hoped that he would be alive when the treasure was found, instead of 6 feet under.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own. Surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
That was Buried Treasure by Ted Hegeman. Well now, greed can make a man dig his own grave, can't it? Poor Theo learned the hard way that not every secret stays buried, and sometimes ambition twists even the smallest desires into something monstrous. If you enjoyed that tale, kiddies, then you'll love the book it comes from, Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, 30 Tales of Terror, available right now on Amazon.com, starting at just $4.99. This spine-tingling collection brings together some of the finest storytellers from the online horror community. Each story is paired with a suitably grim illustration by the talented David Romero. Inside these pages await strange creatures, body mutilations, revenge from beyond the grave, and even a man-eating monster or two. So go on, turn off the lights, turn on the dark. After all, Who needs sleep anyway? But don't wander off just yet. We've got another tale coming right up, and it's sure to get under your skin. This one takes place down in the Louisiana Bayou, where childhood obsessions turn dark and dreams become nightmares. Now, I've always found the Louisiana Bayou to be a fascinating place, full of legends about dark magic, hidden creatures, and things lurking beneath murky waters. Tonight, in our second story, you'll meet James Summers, a young man whose innocent childhood fascination with alligators evolves into something far more sinister. When obsession sinks its teeth into you, it doesn't let go easily. And as James learns, sometimes the line between man and monster isn't as clear as it seems. Brace yourselves, campers, because in this tale, ambition has one hell of a bite. I present to you Overbite, written by Kyle Harrison. Louisiana's a magical place. There's something about the bayou, the smells of the swamps. Travel far enough south, you hear tales of voodoo and gypsies, werewolves and witches. This tale ain't about fae or giants, though. It's about gators. The Dravis Alligator Farm sat on the edge of a stretch of I-35, right near to the 3rd Streetport exit. From the highway, you could see billboards advertising the small establishment, a gimmick that the owner, Owen Dravis, was sure would draw in customers. The massive plastic sign had a moving metallic alligator on it, whose snout opened and closed periodically whenever the sign lit up, enticing all to come over and check out the awesome creatures Dravis had on display. Supposedly, he had taught his alligators several different tricks, the likes of which you wouldn't see if you went to a circus or a zoo. No, the 5 massive crocodilians were trained since infancy to be stars, Owen claimed. The day that James Summers and his 2 sons went to the show was on a whim. His father wanted to get out of the house, drive somewhere, anywhere, for a distraction. Somehow they wound up at the secluded swamp and watched as Owen attempted to show how his gators could gobble up food and do other amazing feats on command. Little James squealed with delight. His father grew bored with it rather quickly and took the children to the boardwalk instead. But that didn't sit well with James. He had become enamored with those gators and would not stop whining and fussing until his father gave in and took them back by the farm. Owen was surprised to see the family had returned. It was rare for him to have repeat customers. "I'm about to close up for the day," he admitted when he saw them. The alligators were cranky and tired, wanting to go sunbathe rather than perform. James' dad wasn't having any excuses. "My kid would not stop fussing to come back and see these damn things, so I'll pay you double if you can put on a 5-minute show. Anything," he demanded. Owen felt sorry for the single dad, realizing it had been hard to take care of 2 boys all alone, and decided to go ahead and give it a try. Grabbing his stick, he herded the gators into the bullpen where they normally performed and grabbed his megaphone, proudly announcing the show was about to start. James stopped fidgeting and sat still, eager to see the act. Dravis would use a distinct 3-chime whistle to get the alligators' attention and then a different sharp whistle to tell them to stop. But the massive creatures were tired and hungry. They weren't interested in any more tricks. Still, Owen did his best, tossing them bits of fish and steak to rile them up, having the big one stand up on its hind legs. James loved it. He listened intently to the whistles that Mr. Dravis did and then began to imitate them. 1, 2, 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 1. It was easy to do. At first, when he tried, the gators didn't respond. Then one of them caught on to James' whistle and acted, letting out a roar. Dravis wasn't paying attention, thinking instead the creature was telling him that he wanted to rest. So he announced that it was time for the final trick. I'll be placing my hand inside the alligator's mouth, trusting the creature implicitly to not bite my arm off, he shouted. James hung on every word. He was wide-eyed and slack-jawed, wondering what would happen. Mr. Dravis made the sharp whistle, and the massive creature opened its jaw as wide as it could, and then he placed his arm in and directly on its tongue. And just to show that I'm not bluffing, and that I trust this creature with my life, I'll now be ordering it to close its mouth, Dravis announced. He made the whistle. 2, 2, 1. James frowned. That didn't sound right. He knew it was different. He tried it himself. As he tried, the gator seemed confused, and Owen chuckled, deciding to do the trick one more time. Then James made the correct whistle. 1, 1, 2. The alligator obeyed and slammed its mouth directly on Mr. Dravis' arm. The man screamed and yelled at the top of his lungs as the creature's jaw tightened, and he began to kick at the animal, desperate to break free. James' dad hurried and called for an ambulance. And James? He simply watched in awe as the blood began to drip from the monster's mouth. With each passing second, the creature tightened its grip on Owen's arm, and he saw skin and muscle beginning to mix. Bits of sinew and bone were pushing out. And all the while, Dravis was screaming bloody murder as he struggled to not pass out. The whole mess lasted about 3 minutes. It was a nasty and brutal scene of utter violence and gore, and James loved every minute of it. The ambulance arrived about 5 minutes after that, but Owen had already lost too much muscle for his arm to be repaired. James' father took his boys to the hospital, too, just in case the experience had traumatized them. James' brother Travis hadn't paid much attention to the entire situation and only wanted to get back home and play football. But James seemed to have been changed by the event. After that day, he was obsessed with anything that closely resembled alligators. Toys, stuffed animals, books, games, it all revolved around gators for the next year. His father eventually grew concerned, thinking that maybe the incident with Mr. Revis was affecting his son's mind and had taken him to the family therapist. But they couldn't find out much wrong with the boy except his sleep habits. For some reason, James had begun to sleep more during the day than at night, but the doctors just simply asserted it had to be a growth spurt. James was overjoyed that his love of gators wasn't the cause of any trouble, and he used the opportunity to convince his father to let them go back down to the bayou to see the farm again. Unfortunately for the gator-loving boy, everything had changed dramatically since their last visit. For one thing, Owen was no longer the owner. A new Chicago businessman named Leonard Reiner was now in charge, and he was searching for every angle possible to profit off the 5 massive crocodilians, including their supposed love for human flesh. Prices had doubled since the last time the Summers had visited, and now the gators seemed less happy, more irritable, and also lethargic. Had they not been fed as often? Or were they being pushed to perform more frequently? Mr. Reiner didn't seem a friendly man. He reminded James of when his father drank and how cruel he could be. What if the gators were being mistreated? It made him sick to his stomach to even consider it. Meanwhile, Travis found it all to be a big joke. You wasted your time coming down here just to see these stupid animals? He laughed. They aren't stupid, James shouted back. The boys soon were bickering and getting ready to fight one another. Their father was nearby on an important business call and not paying attention as they started to shove one another back and forth. But the gators were paying attention. The loud noise and the agitated voices James and Travis were using interested them, and the 5 beasts started to lumber toward them. But the poor boys didn't notice. They were getting more physical, wrestling in the ground and moving closer to the railing, closer and closer to the edge. The mighty beasts opening their mouths, snapping their jaws, and growling as Travis and James got more agitated with one another. "Now you're just an idiot," James said as he gave Travis one final push. Then his brother hit the railings and lost his footing. A second later, he was falling into the gator pit. The creatures moved toward him like he was a fresh piece of meat, and James shouted in surprise as he realized the danger he had just placed his brother in. Reiner tried to shout orders at the brute animals, but they weren't listening. They were hungry and angry. All they saw was food, and Travis ran like the devil himself was after him. Thankfully, Travis managed to scale the railing just before the biggest gator got to make his move, his massive jaws smashing shut as the boy crawled to safety. But the incident was the nail in the coffin. Code enforcement was called, and it determined that the animals were no longer fit to be kept at the farm, and they fined Mr. Reiner well over $1 million. James never got to see his beloved animal friends that he became so obsessed and enamored with again, and his father forbade him from obsessing over them at home as well. "Those monsters nearly killed your brother. Do you really believe that they can be gentle giants? Wake up, boy." His father resorted to drinking and being abusive again after that, driving the wedge further and further between them. James knew what to do. He kept his head down. He didn't cause problems. He didn't even try to mention gators again, but he kept them close to his heart. His father couldn't take that away. Years passed, and like all small boys, James became a man. He started a small business as a taxidermist in Fouke, Arkansas, away from the prying eyes of his father. But he never did give up his first love of gators. Unfortunately, because of the incident from years ago, the Travis farm had never reopened, just a derelict of a bygone era. The land wasn't worth anything, and the state was considering bulldozing it to make a way for a new casino. James didn't think that was fair. He had waited so long to finally be able to rekindle his interest in training the monsters, only to have it snatched away again. It didn't sit well with him at all. He was so angry, in fact, that he went out that night and killed several frogs and spotted owls in the surrounding swamp. He was in his garage, ripping their innards out and getting them ready to be stuffed for display, when his father walked in on his handiwork. He had come down to Fouke to tell him some bad news about another family member, but all thought of that was forgotten when he saw the grotesque ways James harmed the animals. His father stifled a scream. "What is this?" he asked loudly over the sound of a running table saw, shocked at how brutal he had been with the removal of the animal organs. "You wouldn't understand," he admitted, looking down at the tools and thinking of how easy it would be to gut his father the same way. His dad looked at the carcasses, trying to comprehend how the boy he raised could do something so horrible. But it didn't make sense. This had to be a darker side that James had never shown. He stumbled backwards to escape as James tried to make excuses. Then he slipped and fell amid the scat and blood. It happened so quickly, James didn't get a chance to stop his dad as his head slammed into the side of the saw. It sliced his skull apart. James was in shock, staring at his father's limp body as it stuck in the wood shop saw, and he couldn't help but laugh. That only fueled his hunger for blood further. He started to plot and to scheme of how to regain what he had lost. The gators were something special to him, and no one would ever take them away again. It was unfair. Justice had to be served. So he started to stuff his father's body as an experiment to prepare for what was to come. So it was mid-spring of the same year he called up Travis and suggested that they have a brotherly outing to reminisce about the good old days, and the spot where they could meet was a property that James had just recently bought, Travis Alligator Farm. The place was about as devoid of life as a ghost town, nothing like the beautiful stalls that once adorned the swamp. When Travis arrived, he was shocked to see that his brother was already trying to fix up the place, as though expecting it would one day become a thriving business. "You just don't ever give up, do you?" his brother sneered. He looked around at the place. It was covered in dust and muck and even wild hog scat. A complete disaster. There was even a lifelike human mannequin that made Travis stop and shuddered. What had happened here? Where the hell are the Crocs? Travis asked. James turned around, holding a sawed-off shotgun. Well, that's where you come in, big brother, he said, stepping out of the way to reveal a dusty cage. There was a small dish of chicken parts and a bowl of water inside, along with different chains designed to house multiple alligators. But the moment Travis saw the gun and the wild look of his brother's eyes, he knew that this cage was for him. "What's gotten into you?" Travis asked nervously as he jumped away and started toward his car. He never made it that far. The shotgun was actually a tranquilizer, and James had plugged in enough meds to take down a full-size horse. Travis was hit right in the thigh and immediately felt dizzy. He grabbed onto the side of his car's hood, trying desperately to crawl inside and get away. But James was already on top of him. He used the butt of the gun to knock him unconscious, and then proceeded to drag his brother over to the cage. When Travis woke up, he was chained at the feet and hands and completely naked. "What is this?" Travis shouted as James gave him more chicken parts. "When I was a child, this place was a dream come true. And you took that from me. Now you're going to help me get it back," James said. He had an evil gleam in his eye. "What are you going to do to me?" Travis asked, disgusted by the smell of blood and guts in the bucket. He had no intention of eating the nasty, unprocessed food. But James knew his brother's will would break eventually. The farm was still considered closed, so no traffic would come by and be aware of the man locked in the cage. And if Travis was wondering why their father wouldn't check on them, well, if he only knew more about that mannequin at the front entrance. Days passed. Travis tried to starve himself, but it didn't work. Eventually, his body forced him to try and drink and eat something, anything. All the while, James was busy crafting something special, a unique leather that he had intended to make look like crocodilian scales. It was the end of the week when James started. He took the food away and forced Travis to become dependent upon him, to the point that his brother couldn't piss or shit without being instructed. His spirit was broken. He was a prisoner of a madman. And then, once he saw the life was gone in his eyes, James began to strip his brother of his flesh. It was a hot day when he gathered the hot wax and the peeler, and he started on Travis's leg. Slowly, meticulously, as though he were another trophy that was won, James took away his skin. His brother screamed, moaned, and wailed for the first few moments, and then fell into shock. James made sure he didn't bleed out and that every bit of skin was collected in a bucket to be processed. He wanted his gator to be strong, stronger than any that had ever lived. Eventually, the evening rolled in, and James was gluing the leathery scales to his brother's legs. Once he was sure they were all in place, he went and grabbed a mallet from his work truck. The next step would require that he break Travis's legs. He waited until his brother was awake and conscious the next day, his body trembling in pain as the sun hit his burning flesh. The scales were misshapen in his legs and crotch, barely giving him any room to even piss at himself. In that moment of abject shock, Travis came to his senses and began to fight back. He shouted and cussed at James as he approached with the mallet, shaking and trying to break the rusty chains. Adrenaline kicked in, and somehow one of the chains did break. But James was quicker. He slammed the mallet against the back of his brother's leg, straight in between the tendon. Travis screamed and tried to kick. Then James smashed it again, and again, and again. Once James was sure the bone was completely broken, he knelt down and started to bend his brother's leg backwards, forcing him to have a gait like a gator, forcing him down on all fours. Travis was sputtering nonsense, begging James to stop, but he was too drunk on power. "Please, please, James, I have a family now, a little girl. Don't do this. You'll kill me," he said as blood spilled from his mouth. All that you took from me, and you think I give a damn? I don't care what you lost. It's nothing compared to what I had. James snarled back as he kicked his brother straight in the jaw. It was so hard that it broke the bones and his mouth hung loose. Travis was barely breathing, drooling now as his insane brother returned to his leather work. Don't you worry, brother. The jaw will be replaced. You'll be new again. A monster. In some ways, I guess it's not much of a transformation at all, is it? James asked with a chuckle. He worked on into the night. During the next few weeks, James' fingernails grew long like claws. His hair was shaved and his forehead scalped. The leathery scales covered his body, his neck and jaw, elongated by stretching and constant binding. Then James began to feed him the skin that he had peeled off. Bit by bit, his brother lost his humanity. It took months, but finally, Travis was hardly recognizable as a person. He had a longer body and a tail now, and the leathery scales covered every inch of his burnt and peeled flesh. Now, around the same time, a small family was traveling down south, the same way James and his family once had, and decided to pass through the area. They saw the old billboard for Dravis Gator Farm, and the two little girls squealed with joy, begging their parents to go see the gators. The family was never seen again, but the Dravis Farm did reopen about a year later, and there was now a new owner and 5 new gators, a whole family. James Summers finally had it all. They say the gators look uncanny, unnatural, and unnerving, not like animals should. The eyes are what bother them the most. Some say they see the animals shed tears, something reptiles cannot do. And if you drive by in the middle of the night, you will hear them scream. That was Overbite by Kyle Harrison. Well, campers, seems sometimes the things we love most can transform into our greatest horrors. Makes you think twice about chasing after your dreams. A little too eagerly, doesn't it? Both of tonight's unsettling tales reminds us that beneath every ambition lurks something darker, waiting patiently to twist our desires into nightmares. And don't forget, both of tonight's stories are featured in the anthology Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, 30 Tales of Terror. You can get your copy right now on Amazon.com, starting at just $4.99. Don't delay. Terror awaits within its pages. Now, as you head back to your cabins, be careful where you step. And if you hear any sounds in the night, a snapping of jaws or the scraping of a shovel, well, I'd suggest you move just a little faster. All right, kiddies, that's enough scares for one night. Be sure to douse the fire on your way out. And remember, keep those ambitions in check. You never know when you'll dig up something better left buried or find yourself developing an appetite you can't control. Until next week, keep the fire burning and your wits about you. You never know what's waiting just beyond the firelight.